Welcome to Ever Beyond, Beyond. On Wolf Spirit Radio, No Borders Radio, and everbeyond.info. Be prepared to leave your belief systems behind as we go beyond teachers, beyond gurus, beyond duality, ever beyond, And welcome tonight to Ever Beyond. It's June the 29th, 2014, and I'm broadcasting, simulcasting on No Borders Radio, Ever Beyond Radio, Wolf Spirit Radio, and probably one or two others. You never know these days. Things are spreading. The network is growing. And growing with that network are our group of people who are doing things around the world, doing these things, and coming up with ideas, doing research into what is apparent, and finding out what is real and what is not real. And in that vein, tonight, I am pleased to have on the show Clan Mother Karen Ann McDonald. Well, actually, how do you see? Okay, so here's the thing, right? In addressing me when talking on Skype and things like that, and if you notice, if you look at the show notes on Ever Beyond Radio, you'll see there's an unusual use of the colon character, the two dots, one above the other, it's something that I've noticed before, so I really have to ask, what does that encoding? I can see it's an encoding as a programmer. I see it's some form of signifier. But could you explain what it signifies? How we can use it, and why are you using this particular notation?
Well, first of all, I'd like to thank you again, JP, for having us on. You're just one of the best hosts I've ever been with, and also to have Luke Andrew Monday Wing with us. Also, and I think it's really important here that people start knowing a little bit of what we're doing. So anyone that follows me on Facebook, you'll see the Karen M. Lusick McDonald. You'll see the colons being used and hyphens, that type of thing. A lot of people, I think, when they've been going into what we call the straw man or admiralty system, learn about commercial status or legal status. And this is for the purpose, and it doesn't matter that these legal systems are unfortunately used in these what we call second world countries, which Luke and I will explain a little bit about what's called the corpus juris secundum, means second world law. That's something that myself and him are not out of, and we're actually with the first world law. So as people have heard first, second, and third world sort of countries, that sort of thing, or laws, this is what it sort of pertains to. And the upper capitals, I think all of us were taught that word to spell. It's like witchcraft. We're taught to spell in school. And when we see things that come in for people, let's say in bills, it's called capitals. And there's actually forms of what we call legalese or laws. I call it legalese. But it's called capitis diminuto maxima. And basically that's all domestic types of legalese, i.e. income tax, credit cards, statements, loans, mortgages, speeding and parking tickets, all those sort of things. It's very trite, but this small, small detail has extremely deep significance for most people. And so if you go into either Black's Law Dictionary or Gage Canadian Dictionary, those sort of things, when you have capital letters, it means actually to take advantage of. And so there's a couple different ways to do it. We can also do upper and lower case as well. That's what they taught to do. That's also capitis diminuto, which is also in Roman law. And it basically diminishes or abridges what's called a personality, i.e. a person being a fake, an actor, not in your true form. There's another way as well, using that, which is, again, capitis diminuto minima, and Media, Maxima, those sort of things. So basically how we actually put our identification identifies who we are and in what sort of, if you want to say, like class of law. So you'll see a lot of people trying to do some of that. This is what they call, what is your name? You know, as opposed to who are you, what are you called? And this is what happens to people in courts of law. And so name being basically, you know, what's your name for the court records? You know, what's your slave ID? So this is something that we don't want to go into joinder, you know, with the what you call legal birth certificates and stuff that's issued by states or by the different governments. So I'm technically outside the jurisdiction in that because we're not dead. I don't use fiat currency or anything like that. So does that kind of explain a little bit why I'm outside that straw man here by using all the capitals and stuff? Distinctive way that I utilize my ID.
Right. So essentially the colon significa is a name. Yeah. It's like if I was writing in PHP, to signify a variable name, I have a dollar sign. So I would be dollar JP, for instance. You'd be dollar Karen. And that is a container for the qualities and properties and methods of the being they call me, the variable. I'm the variable, and you know, and the container has a name. So, yeah, it's like you have your vehicle, but you're the soul soul beneath that. So, you've got the and is there a way? Do you pronounce it? Do you go, Karen, or is it?
You know, oh boy, here we go.
Clicking here like the Zulus.
Oh my God. Yeah, we're going to do the clicking sound. Yeah, actually, it's really easy. We go that, you know, we're called or, you know, I'm here by special appearance or whatever. There's an old thing that actually, when they say, what is your name? I said, we are that we are and that we're nameless. So I always kind of joke around and say, well, you know, we're known as this or my dad called me this. And I always put that into because we still follow matrilineal lineage and stuff as clan mothers and stuff in international law. So it really is kind of interesting. People need to do, you know, learn a little bit about the legalese and, you know, learn how this defines us. But, you know, absolutely, we are, you know, we are that we are, you know, go from that I-ism to we-ism. But, you know, that's where I go into that. Really, I command the ship, I command the fleet, you know. I do not submit, nor am I subordinate to anyone else's jurisdiction. If that makes sense. So that's what we do. And I think it's really, you know, kind of a good thing because we were talking about this earlier and how we identify ourselves too, you know, in there. But if you see that, you know, sometimes I'm known as Cedar, the Siddhar, like the Ringing Cedars of Russia. So when they say clan mothers, it's a higher jurisdiction than you would see in the corporate jurisdiction being second world law. And we'll go into a little bit. Luke and I have done some amazing stuff, bringing forward Meredith Quinn, some of his instructions and teachings that were dormant or hidden occult laws. And people can go onto basically Facebook, Meredith Quinn, Universal Writings. Also on Tribal Laws, Meredith Quinn. You can take a look at that on YouTube. So I just wanted to let you know a little bit of that. And we'd like to talk a little bit. We found some very, very exciting things. This is why we're coming back to reestablish our jurisdiction in these areas, and I'm really excited to let you know that I'm ready to go set up my teepee, like, you know, an hour north. So I just got all packed up and repacked, and we're ready to hit the road and actually start up my homeland and my motherland within, you know, about 48 hours here. So
you're ready to go. You're actually just about to start a new segment mm-hmm. of your life. How awesome to catch yep. you at this moment.
Yeah, I wanted to share that with all my good friends. I went, JP, I got some great news. Best news ever.
So you got a bit of land. That's fantastic news. What was the process you used to manifest that?
It was an amazing process, actually. It's something that Lucas and I will go into, but it's actually the power in the original laws of the land, of what clan mothers actually hold for territorial jurisdiction. Because of this territorial diction, it's going to go universal and definitely global with what we're doing. So we're going to be very excited and to share with you some of the information. But virtually what we did is did a proclamation that was sent in that not only was distributed by Lucas, I think we put out about probably 7,000-8,000 emails globally with the jurisdictional proclamation that was done. And we started doing some of this. It was an amazing thing to send a command letter that we put through, basically asserting and reaffirming a treaty that was put up. And I think we talked a little bit about that way back in, I think, October 31st when we were on with Patty Broussard with the different seals and stuff like that. And Lucas, I think, would be a good idea is maybe to put some of those different pictures or things like similar to what we did to give you and the listeners some of the different things that could be put up to see what these proclamations do entail. But virtually we went and sent them out that it was a treaty that was into place before 460 B.C., and it was given to the actual de jure clan mother and us being of the white bear. And it has to do with blood lineages, and clan mothers are chosen and elected into those things. And there's very strict criteria as to what a clan mother is and the teachings as well. And after that, we put things in and entered them in and logged them into the Inns courts, actually, at the City of London. They've gone into as well the Vatican. They've also gone into different places like Obama. So they've gone into what you call the three sovereign states as well to make sure they were aware of what we do. This goes back to the original tribal laws, very much like the Druid type law, and we'll talk about Brennan law and telegony, how this is affecting people, how the women had previously lost their land claims and the water rights. So we went up and we put these proclamations forth. And we started doing this way back again in December. And then I went up to the land with a friend of mine, Mark Randall Smith. And Mark Smith and I went up. We did basically what you call a proclamation, a reclamation, like a posting, that people knew that. So it was also sent to all the different government jurisdictions as well, internationally, in the international realm, and locally as well. And then they went up and actually did, if you want to say, ceremonies. So in those sort of terms, we basically raised the water above the watermark. And again, this is stuff that has been done. So the lands and the waters both have been consecrated as, if you want to say, holy, but also original territorial land claims. So it's basically just a reclamation and taking them outside the corporate condom or the admiralty jurisdiction.
You've taken it back off London, basically.
Exactly. That's exactly what's happened to any corporation. And this was in preservation for the sacred waters and the skies and the land and the air in those areas. So we've been able to do it, and as Luke will tell you, it goes beyond actually even this global little planet as we know it. But basically what it was to set up pristine and natural environments that will include around my natural hot springs up here. That we're going to call Spirit of the White Bear Healing Center, which will be up near what we call Halcyon Hot Springs in that area, and Halfway Hot Springs, what's known on the Upper Arrow Lakes in this particular area in the Kootenays. And I just had the pleasure of being with Marilyn James, who's the official spokeswoman of what they call the Sinaiic tribes out here, too. So we've been having quite a fun time, and I'm just about to start getting the teepee set up. So everything's getting basically packed, repacked, and ready. We left some stuff up there. Previously when we did the ceremonies, we also left some more stuff up a few weeks ago when I was there. So the big haul and the big move with everything going in will be this week. So I'll let Luke maybe elaborate a little bit on that. But what we're going to do is we're going to deem them now as sacred spaces of love. They're under our peace treaty, and people will have to start really understanding what the laws are now internationally. So we're setting up basically kin domains here and provide them as national healing and heritage sites. And they are not to be used ever for commerce or commercial real estate or property and reclamation as well. So it's for preservation also for, our children as well. So, Luke, I'll let you maybe embellish a little bit on what we did there.
Okay. It's we've done various different proclamations at certain times, and all, as Karen said, like, it does bring it out of London. It takes it out of London, reclaims it from London, which each proclamation, as we went on, has kind of removed an extra part of that kind of system, essentially. So it is kind of reclaiming everything, all the lands and waters that can actually Which when we can then actually shut that all down, close it down, close that system down. It's fictional, and it's an interference to everyone and everything. So to take it away, take everything away, and reset the globe, the lands and waters of the globe, actually into a first world jurisdiction. Totally shuts down and diminishes that system, which means it can be got rid of now, along with the whole money aspect of it, because it's just not needed. No one out there needs any of that sort of stuff, and it's about moving on. As Karen said, we move forward to create these sacred spaces of love. So wherever anyone may be, it's about them having the opportunity then to live by the original laws that have been handed down in peace, and then create a home space and kin domain for them and their loved ones, essentially.
So Lucas, could you run past, I don't know if I've got this right, a kin domain, which is a kind of like a family clan type group, but not necessarily blood related, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, it would begin with yourself to start with. It's like your physicality, as we're all transcendent beings, focused in a certain amount of matter at a time. It begins with yourself. So where you live is exactly where you are. You live within your physicality. That is your kin domain, and then obviously it goes to extend further out to that. So it would then go to any loved ones, a child or your beloved, or any of your relatives, mom or dad or grandma. And then as that extension goes, it starts with yourself and then goes to your home. So a kin domain would be, as you would say, family. We wouldn't use the word family, but loved ones, your home area and your gardens, you would create that as a sacred space for all of you. And then as those start to pop up everywhere, everyone's starting to do that, then you end up getting like pockets of areas which are all sort of going by those similar kind of values and principles. So a whole area or a whole region then becomes, everyone can step back into a way of thinking of it as a sacred area. And once you start thinking of it that way, then you're obviously more likely to protect it and take care of it and look after it. So that's kind of what it is. But it starts with yourself. So it starts with protecting, defending, and taking care of yourself, purifying yourself first. And then once you can get the ball rolling with that, you can start extending it out, further to others.
So that's the what you call a kin domain, which is, I can see like the domain of those who are kin to you. who you feel kindly disposed towards, members of your community and things like that. Yes,
absolutely right.
Yeah.
That's where it starts.
So here's the thing. I mean, we live in a world of conflict.
Mm-hmm.
How does this factor in? Because what you're talking about is something that one has to voluntarily accept and stand under. You see where I'm going with that?
Yeah, exactly. It's the same as any the way everything is now, though, isn't it? It's everyone's. They make their decisions upon how they're going to act in a certain situation. So we sort of have to take it to. These are original laws that are there, and we can put them down and say, there's the law, for like everyone. There's no nonsense of trickery or deceit or whatever and how it functions now. There's the laws. And then obviously it's up to an individual whether they go by that law or not. And, you know, that would then be between kind of like them, the universe, and natural law and nature, you know, on how they're kind of sort of dealt with. Yeah. But it's an acceptance in a way, but I'd say it's more of a return. It's like a return to sort of a natural way of living, you know, the wild kind of way. That it's a choice. I mean, if we're sort of clean and pure and you're creative and you're loving and, you know, you just want sort of the best for yourself and everyone else around you, then it would be an easy thing to do because that's how you are anyway, or how you would like to live. So it's just a matter of sort of taking away those blockages and constraints and just removing them that are in your lives at the moment. You know, the whole legalist system is one of them, but there's other stuff. So you know, different relationships may end that you realize are not actually any good for you, you know, mentally or physically and stuff. So it's about cleansing that and just removing any of those obstacles to just exactly live, you know, a peaceful kind of happy existence, how you wish to live, loving and caring. And, you know, it may be difficult for some to come to terms and grasp the idea of it, or it's so far beyond what they're used to that they just can't sort of see it. But, you know, over sort of learning more and more about it over time, you know, it seems to me that it's all anyone really wants is to be loved and to love and, you know, to have peace within their lives, to be free to do what they love to do and what they wish to do. So I think that's kind of how it sort of works, really. So it's there's no force on anyone because ultimately it's their choice whether they, you know, adhere to a universal or natural law or not, or, you know, and then that can't be imposed on anyone, you know. Unfortunately, how laws are now, you know, the legalist laws are now, they're totally imposed, which causes division and stress, and then obviously, you know, sort of defense and struggles against it, you know. When you're actually told to do something, it's not the way it should be. So there's no force, there's no you will live this way, you know, you must, or that's it. It's like, here it is, now it's your decision. And that's how I see it.
So this is a situation very much like a kind of, I would call, I haven't got a word for it yet, but I would, rather than a sovereign nation, a nation of sovereigns.
It wouldn't be that, because sovereignty is a tricky word that many have to get past. Sovereign or sovereignty is still only the top of what would be a corporation in the second world corporate jurisdiction. So it's still only within a legalism realm. It's just a ranking system within that whole world.
So what I'm trying to get, because see, to the best of our abilities, we've been learning over the last few years. Well, I certainly have, you know, from the last 5 years or so, because, you know, I had no idea. Nobody has an idea until someone tells you that, hang on a second, that's not a thing called the government. That's a bunch of corporations that kind of hook together, but they're not a government. They don't exist. It doesn't exist. And as soon as I was able to actually grok that, get that in my head and say, ah, right, so it's all a fake. Yes, it's all a fake. Yeah, all right, I see. So it's all a fake, isn't it? Yes, it's all. Yes, it's a fake. Ah, right. Yeah. Wow. What a fake it is, isn't it?
Exactly.
It takes a while for it to sink in, you see what I mean?
Yes, sort of. I was the same. I was sort of double checking with myself for about 2 days. I was like, is it really a fake? Are you sure it's really a fake? and then when it actually really, you know, dropped, I was like celebrating, running around the sort of lounge, you know, cheering and shouting. So yeah, as you say, many don't know, most don't know, you know, hardly any don't know. And that's what we're sort of all have to kind of get together and share now is putting it out there that you don't have to do that. No one has to bow to that system because it's not even there anyway. So once we can say, hey, look, it doesn't exist, so there's no need to do that, then we move forward. We step again.
That's right. It's well, I mean, really, it's about unpicking, unlocking the mental knots that have been tied in our brains, in our minds, by the propaganda, by the mind control, or what people call my conditioning. Oh yeah, I'm my conditioning, because I'm a working class bloke and I do this and I do that. But yeah, you're talking to me, and you know, okay, I don't see you as a working class bloke. I see you as my friend. You know, so where does that come in? And all that. So people are really starting to redefine who and what they are. You're right.
Yeah, and it's really exciting. I mean, I love it. You know, looking out there these days, you know, yeah, we all have some days that are better than others. But looking out there sort of most days now, and articles popping up and comments pop up on different websites, or, you know, someone sort of says, oh, this is my interpretation of this crop circle, or all those types of things, you know. And it's really exciting because everyone is starting to sort of come into their own. And there's less sort of fear to making a mistake in your interpretations and stuff. Because ultimately, there's not really any wrong. It's your perception or your interpretation. So, yeah, it's marvelously exciting to see it all, that so many more are sort of paying attention. And even friends of mine now, they would have never... and have never listened to me talk, you know, about any of this stuff, start to sort of comment on certain things I may post, and like, oh, right, this is cool. You know, they're becoming aware, and I think there is a definite lift, and everyone's eyes are starting to open a bit. No matter what level you may be at in terms of sort of your learning or knowledge of stuff, yeah, it's opening up. It's wonderful, you know. So exciting.
One of the things I wanted to just add into here is that this is a time about people coming in. When we talk about beyond duality or polarity or coming back into peace or the pole shift, it's our inner shift coming in. And part of that, what people need to know, and I think it's really, really important now, is that what this blood lineage does with the 13 original clan mothers and the lineage, the women actually lost a lot of their, if you want to say homestead, is kind of a way some people sort of get it, but their rights and freedoms. And through this was actually through intercoursing or inadvertently mating with men. And this is something with the Brehan laws that are still on the books today that is very, very important for both the men and the women, and to know what lineage you're coming off of. And we're going to talk also a little bit about what we're going to be doing with how this affects in essence, like dethroning people like Elizabeth II because of their negative bloodline and what they've done and how that defines them. So just as we were talking about when you said, you know, the upper capitals and why am I using this ID, is that even with their particular negative bloodline, what they're known as the blue bloods or, reptilian, is that that defines people who they are also in sort of a classification, if you want to say that. Is that by their own definition in the Legalese Acts, is that they are classified as a, what you want to call human, because they're part animal with their DNA. What this does is that it classifies them into a position that they are also classified as a human. And when you see what human is, you look at monster, and monsters in legalese and in law, by definition, cannot own property or have any owning rights whatsoever. So that's part of it. But the women themselves, there was about 9-10 degrees of Brehan laws. And for example, if you kissed someone and you shared information with that particular blood lineage or intertribal, if you want to say marriage, it's still classified as a marriage, the men could have different rights over the women for certain days. So this was the difference between having, if you want to say a courtly, like a noble type of fair relationship, or, you know, a peace relationship, i.e. a treaty between you and your beloved, that held certain details that we needed to actually follow, as opposed to someone that just went with someone, even dated for a bit, started kissing right away. There's all different things. People have lost or breached their rights. And this was the whole admiralty with the men and the seamen entering in to the women. And the seamen is the seamen. Through, this is part of what we want to talk to about, the difference between twin rays, twin flames as well, and soulmates. So this is huge. And the telegony right now, which I want to really get forth to people, is that telegony is a particular terminology that, for example, it came back with one of the earls way back when in the 1800s. He actually took a horse. I don't know if you know this, JP, but he took a thoroughbred, and then he mated it with basically a type of zebra, and they couldn't produce, you know, offspring. But later, when they went to breed the two thoroughbreds, basically they had a striped horse. And so we also know this is why you can have two white people having a black child, or someone who is, you know, intercourse with someone else can produce different features off those children, even though it had been years before that. And so there are remnants, like, you know, picking up computer programs where you get viruses which transmute both ways. So this is a huge thing. And we need to go back to those peace laws. And part of that is cleansing. Part of that is going back into superfoods, raw foods, looking at even vegetarian, like veganism. Because a man that is incapable, is in love, is literally incapable of killing anything. And so we need to redefine this. So the peace laws in the area, too, are far, far, far more outreaching than most people even think. So that's why I really suggest people go to the Ringing Cedars of Russia or the Anastasia series, because this is a template to stuff. And people that have studied a lot of things like the genesis of the Holy Grail or the Holy Grail and our genesis of our bloodlines, this is what those treaties in the Hague Court still adhere to today. And this is why people are in the genetic messing and the cloning and all those different things. But we need to get back to some basics. So I wanted to have actually Luke talk a little bit about this, because this really is, you know, what we're doing is we're going into, you know, plant those gardens and get those trees going and have a place that our sacred beloveds like my twin ray can come to. That's what the teepee is.
Wow. So hang on a second.
There's a lot there.
Yeah. Let's can I break into that a little bit, because there's some fascinating stuff in there. First of all, you're talking about 13 13 matriarchal bloodlines that I presume were usurped by the ancient alien bloodlines. Is that right?
Yeah.
That is absolutely correct.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So there's a knowledge that there needs to be 13 bloodlines, but they were usurped. And were they usurped presumably violently?
Yes, by the most part, a lot of it was. Now it's, you know, I mean, we had a lot of stuff we've known from genetic cloning. In fact, Lawrence Gardner's got a great book, you know, The Genesis of the Grail Claims. I think anyone that's familiar with the Anunnaki and the Nibiru and all the stuff that's going on now, Enki and that kind of stuff, if you trace even your lineage and, you know, like so-and-so begat so-and-so, it's like, where's the genesis? Where's your gene pool off of? So the usurping came in. Cloning certainly came in. I know south of us, like about an hour and a half, is Nelson, which is one of the well-known, you know, super soldier cloning, genetic Nazi SS underground military deep base here that they play with a lot of these things in the world. So this has been going on for quite some time. And there are very few people now because of intercoursing or basically inbreeding, in essence. This has created a huge travesty. This is why we see the diseases. That's why I know with my quantum medical background, that's why I do those genetic cleansings and clearings and stuff, if you want to say, using radionics and skill biofeedback machines and all the Tesla type of things that I do for people still, by the way, free. So they can always still contact me, because I still do people off Facebook or Skype. you know, if they want to contact me at clanmother13@gmail.com or on Facebook. But what happens is we use the essential oils to do those cleansing. That's the only thing that's a universal or cosmic type of medicine that will go internally and clean out the old charges or emotions or DNA and RNA diseases that have come along through, whether inadvertently people taking modified foods here now or through chemtrails or Morgellons. We're doing with a lot of different techniques myself. That's why the intent is to set up one of the best state-of-the-art, you know, using the best of science and technology and arts. It's a natural but light technology type of health center, which is what I ran between colonics, amethyst beds, you know, the whole nine yards. So people can still get a hold of us for that. But that's part of our thing, is also cleansing out the genetics, you know, because of the problems that we've seen, right? And
So Karen, how do we cleanse our genetic lines? I mean, I've already had my kids. I'm in my 50s. Do I have to get my son to go vegan? Oh, my God. He loves his bacon. I've gone vegetarian over the last year. I got really ill. And then I just stopped because 'cause my guides told me to. So I said, all right, then. And I haven't eaten meat since. It actually made me sick when I tried to eat some.
It will, yeah. And I think what a lot of people don't realize is, I think we need to get back to, it's like words again. What does it mean? It's the whole word, the game here. Etiology is that to meet meant to come together and meet, as in the act of like potlucking, you know, potlatching. To meet meant the act to nourish together, which was to be the fruits of the flesh and the vegetables. So actually veganism or solarianism, where there's lots of us at times where we fast, where you don't even need food or water. And we know, like Genesis, Jericho Sunfire and other people, Jasmine, that don't. And I've gone for quite some time as well. So we actually know that even that's, you know, again, it's a thought processing and it's an ascension thing. So the thing about letting go of animals is we really have to realize that we're in a time here of chemtrails, Morgellons, there's recumbent DNA. There are very few people that are at spring waters, which we should be. I only drink spring water. I won't take anything less. Even being up in here in the best waters and mountains up in here, is that we do see the chemical trailings coming in, which is, you know, between that and Fukushima, it's adding into, you know, extra lead, aluminum, beryllium, even the pristine lakes now. And so, again, that has far monumental things that's happening to the animals. So it doesn't matter if anything's free range anymore. Those animals are uptaking acid rain. They're taking radioactive materials. That's no longer water. What's coming down in the rain or in our lakes and streams is going to have to be dealt with.
And indeed, it gets concentrated in the animal itself.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so this is a matter of getting smart. And let's face it, we don't need animals. So you can go to the World Peace Diet. In fact, animals are the worst source. They're not where you get your protein properly, and it certainly isn't for calcium. So, I mean, I think people need to relook at what raw foods are. And in raw foods, I mean by garden fresh living foods, wild foods, before anyone's contaminated them. I would never think, in fact, in my world, it's like classification of people. If you're a noble savage, you're going to take noble elemental foods, ormus-rich foods, which would be, we classify as heritage heirloom or raw superfoods, you know, a la David Wolf, a la, you know, like what we're doing with Dr. Nick Good, Dr. Robert Kassar, Dr. Gabriel Cousins, all those people are fantastic out there. Victoria Batalis, you know, or sorry, Batenko and all those people. That's why we are raw foodists. You know, it's not that anyone can't do it, and you can transition. Even if you go to 51%, you're over the hump. You know, it gets you out of that acidic state, out of that warring state, out of that conflict. And that's how people are controlled, because they're in an acidic state because they're eating the animals and the mucus forming, pus forming, all sorts of stuff. You know, and remember, most of the animals have been vaccinated and injected, and we all know what aluminum does, so you're uptaking that kind of toxicity. So we need to do that, and that's where I come in and scan with the biofeedback. That's where we go in and say, get some, you know, essential oils. They're like thousands of times more powerful than herbs. Get deworming. Everyone's got to get dewormed right now. They've got to get alkaline water, you know, from a natural spring, or at least baking soda, boron, I don't, you know, whatever works, and getting enemas and colonics, because we're having to pull this stuff out of our systems. There's no way to keep up with the amount of chemicals that are coming in the air these days. I mean, I can see what's coming over our heads here. Like, I'm presently in one of the places called New Denver, what was previously known as El Dorado. You know, so these were the previous Japanese internment camps. I went, and we know what's coming right down the road, what we're getting prepared for now. What they had in World War II here is going to end up what's going to be in this part here, too. So, you know, people are going to have to start adhering to things and get into a peaceful way of living, that they're in balance, you know, with nature, with the animals. And I have to look at it, too. I was laughing with them. I was just doing a radio show with Lucas, with actually James Wright. From actually ILM for Mason, and a few other things, and when we do Revolution Radio and stuff as well, is that when you're taking vaccines and stuff too, what you're doing is you're actually injecting animals and viruses, bacteria. Even it's like taking still animals in that actually are recumbent, that actually will start regenerating within you. And that's why people are dying, and they're getting this candida yeast and mold and what they call cancers. And they're not going to make it through this, you know, higher vibrational time coming, you know, as the guys are cranking up the, you know, harp tunes up here in the EMFs. And, I mean, we've got to look at this is all about balance. And if you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, you're fine. If those chemical traces are in you, not so fine. So
It all goes back to the kin domains again, because with having those amounts of toxins and the buildups inside you from you know, the meat and everything else in your foods, that takes you back down, as Karen said, to like you're in that acidic state, those levels. So that's where the lusts and the desires and those kind of emotions and feelings come forwards, which obviously propagates, you know, certain types of behavior. You know, and then that's the going out and sleeping around and lustful, deceitful behavior that can occur. So, obviously, again, that's promoting, you know, the free, open sexual unions that is that nobody is aware of. That in the second world legalist domain, they can then deem as their right to go and invade certain lands, you know, invade and take over and take the waters and the minerals and the land for themselves, because it's openly and freely then been given away because of those sexual unions. So it goes back to that. It's a sort of a circular thing. It's all not one part that's in, you know, stands alone. It's all encompassed there.
Could you break that down a little bit more? The sure. Connection between land and sexual union, and yeah. Where it starts, where it goes, and how it implicates everybody.
Well, if we look way, way back to the idea of the sacred feminine, the sacred goddess, not that we like the term god or goddess, because that actually means chaos, but if we just go with that so everyone could grasp it.
Women of the clan is actually a better way to put it, or women of the great spirit. We're not going to use god or goddess.
No. So they were the actual first sort of thought to be and considered to be the first connection to the earth, to the lands and the waters, and the original sort of wisdom and knowledge keepers. So they were the protectors and guardians of whatever areas, those sacred areas, which, you know, at one time was the entire globe. And then, obviously, moving forward from that, the union they would have with a man would obviously have to be at the purest kind of level, that they were not then, you know, intoxicated with certain bad forms of stuff. So everything was kept pure, it could be kept sacred, and there was no kind of infection or blockages brought in there. You know, the woman's waters were the sacred waters.
Right? And by military terms, there was no war military engagement. That's what a ring is on some woman's finger when she's been put into a de facto church and registered as chattel and property. So this is about not having engagements in war here.
Yeah. Right. So the woman would be standing as essentially the first law of the land, as in the protector of the sacred lands, that then has gone on and on and on to the way that everything is, taking everyone down to sort of these base elemental sort of, you know, lusts to just sleep with anyone because you can, you know, it's free love, etc., etc. Well, that means that the woman is freely giving access to and giving away her sacred waters, and therefore loses the connection to the land. So it would then becomes up for grabs. And because it's up for grabs, they have claimed that under their system, giving them the reason to come in. So that's kind of how it works. It went on from sort of a global thing when it was original tribal lands living in peace to areas started to sort of get more defined, and then it got moved to estates, and the heirs to sort of estates, if we look back to sort of the early 1100s, 1200s, were always through the female heir of that bloodline. So the men were actually starting to get, you know, being told to marry in, as it were, usurp those lines by marrying in, and then they created the trust estates of, because they have married in, they have engaged in warfare, they have got engaged and then married in that legalist system. So from that, which was around the 12, 1300s, is where we get the trusts, the estates, like the pasture lands where the roadways are now built, the tolls, you know, passports. You would have to get permission from the feudal baron of the estate to be able to cross out of those areas into another estate land. And that's how it's gone. And it's all from the usurpation of stealing the female heirs' lands and waters, essentially. Does that make sense?
That's fascinating. So, so it's essentially, but we're talking about what they called robber barons, who are essentially, basically the mafia's taken over this planet. What are we going to do about it, guys?
Well, what we do is what Karen and I have done is to kind of figure all this stuff out and trace your lines, trace your matrilineal lines, find out where, what clan, what tribes you're off of, going as far back as you can to those roots, and then working out like the legalist language to be able to remove yourself from it and then stand once again back in the first world, which sort of we term the land of the living, and living by those original kind of laws and sort of peace treaties in peaceful ways. It's not a thing that it can be done just overnight, but it's something that everyone would need to start doing, really, is to start tracing their stuff, you know, to trace their lines and figure out who they are. And then once you get a good idea of that, that's when, you know, the stuff like the colon and the name and, you know, those kind of details come into play then. Is the language that you would use, swapping and changing the words. For an example, kids or children. Well, the word kids is obviously, kids are like a baby goat. So you would be saying that your children are actually animals, baby animals. Whereas they would be children, if they're children, then they're baby living beings. That's one example of that. There's also, you know, all the other stuff that's out there in the straw man kind of thing, like persons and citizen, and, you know, start looking at those definitions and then alter that language. And, you know, it takes a while for you to actually sort of pick it up and be able to say it in the conversation or use it correctly.
That's
when sort of the next sort of step in the mind, that sort of starts to break away all that stuff that's in the brain, you know, those controlling kind of mechanisms that are enforced there. That starts bit by bit to strip them away. And then all the other stuff, the kingdomain things, it all starts to tie together nicely, you know, it flows together. And then you can sort of begin to see a bigger picture of it there. It's all kind of connected together.
So. Interesting. I just had a flash about Latin. Being the language of the dominating force that has been sort of grinding its way, pulping its way around the world, the use of Latin creates a sense of shock and awe in somebody when it's used on them. Because, number one, you don't understand it, but you know that they're using it to define how wrong you are. Because that's what they always did. You know, and I'm dealing with a past life where I was a Roman, and I was I just walked into people's houses. You know, I was just like, this is mine. We're working on that one. It's very much like the Knights Templars thing. You know, we are God's warriors. Do you believe in God? God who? Thwack. Oh, there's my head gone. it's like we don't understand what the heck you're doing with this stuff, but we know it's bad because you're hurting us. So that's the kind of feel of what Latin's like, and then they use it as a religion and they use it as law in order to coerce us, essentially. It is very unfair.
Well, yeah. And Luke will talk to you a little bit. Like, I mean, there's a whole bunch of things we want to go through. Is the first world law, and maybe this could be done in subsequent things too, but the corpus juris secundum, there's a lune de benedictor, and there's a Maximus and Romanus and stuff like that. That's where that Roman nationalistic law came in. And like right now, one of the things we're going through is this pole shift, is that with our stuff too, by the way, with Vega and Lyra, and it's really interesting, if you take a look at the constellations, the pole shift, the stars, as we're going through this right now in that Stargate, they kind of look like the old Turtle Island. It looks like a turtle if you look at it. But that's actually what the shift is. And this pole star is actually, that's what's taking place, which is right above my head just about right now. So if you see, that's where the area is and what we're doing in these areas. It's aligning things in. Also constellation that has been on a, it's like coming home, you know, in essence as well for me on that. One of the things, too, is you mentioned about these, you know, dead languages and stuff. We need to look at a living language, you know, and the whole thing, even Vega, where does it come? Vegans, you know, Lyra, what we're talking about, what our blood lineage and where we're going up back to. It's a very cosmic thing. It's a very sacred thing in here, too. And that's where really where a lot of this stuff gets into, with these Anastasias going in here. Because, you know, like anything, we need to be able to bring people into these areas that are ready for that, that, as they say, have the eyes to see and the ears to hear. You're in those higher chakras. It's for higher vibrational stuff getting in there. And part of the thing, too, I'll just have Luke touch on a little bit, too, is why we're doing it in this area. Kamloops is where I actually arrived. So my original energy signature here is in a place we call Kamloops, but Kamloops, as most people know, and I don't use the terms British Columbia, which is interesting, because even the Sioux, some of the tribal people, they were the rivers people of the Columbia River Basin out here at some point. But we know the Bear Clan because of the different things, DNA and genealogy and all my stuff going back to like around the Black Sea and what's happening in that pyramid right now and why things are being released, and you're seeing stuff coming up that's been dormant, our artifacts and stuff being returned like 65 million years old finally back to us. But like with Elizabeth, what they've done to throw people out of time right now is the use of what they've done with Big Ben. So I'm going to have Lucas elaborate just a little bit on those points, please.
Okay, sure. Karen actually arriving out on Kamloops when she did was essentially, she had arrived on that land, that Crown Land, what was termed as the Crown Land there, that after that, after Karen had actually arrived there, the evidence is out there and can be compiled now of Elizabeth number two, actually going out there with her coterie and stealing children from one of the reservation schools and stuff like that. And no one exactly knows what happened to them afterwards. Now, the act of her actually going out there and stealing children from what would be sort of classed as a it's a higher realm, and Crown Lands and Sacred Lands is actually a tort, and as far as I'm aware, is actually would stand still stand now as being punishable by hanging. Okay, so I mean that's obviously a very very kind of serious crime to have committed. That's coming from the world of the dead into the land of the living and stealing children, and then taking them, forcing them back into the world of the dead. So it's effectively killing them on that level, rather than anything else that's actually may have happened. What was the second point there, Karen?
Again, what we're talking about in there. So her coming into the territory, right? So this actually is why we've put things through forth to like people like Matt Taylor and through to the different agencies, governmental and stuff, and military and stuff, because it's actually an act of war and an act of treason to have done that. And then the other thing too is, you know, as we're getting into these different times and stuff, that's why I was talking about time and Big Ben. We need to get back into natural timing. So basically what we've done is we've gone through, we've kind of sifted through all this stuff. We've sorted out our original laws again, our original customs, our original languages. We're doing the Ogham stuff. I've got pictoglyphs across here. I was just back out across out of New Denver that clearly shows this was Bear Clan territory, which is our lineage as well, going into that as well. So into this whole thing about we've got to get people back into what we call as children of time, and I'm actually out of time as a clan mother. But what we're doing is, what is this timing thing, and how do we do it when we call Indian time? So 13 of those bloodlines, by the way, a bunch of us are white. Cleopatra tribes, Noah's Ark, all the Anglos and stuff from our original empires there, Saxons, that. These are white tribes. So make very clear, an Indian is not red. An Indian is the way you live with the Creator's universal law. So this thing to do with Ben is huge, Big Ben. So if you want to take it off, it's your time.
there's a passage here from Meredith Quinn's book, and it's talking about time calendars and stuff. So I'll just read this out. It's very short. It says, the Creator laid down a spiritual law that was not to be changed. The last day of the seven-day period was to be kept in respect to the Creator, Great Spirit, who is the author of creation. It is known today as the Sabbath. History shows twice this day, and when it is to occur, has been changed. So no civilized religion has kept according to law unchanged. Next, it was to be kept at the same time by all people of the world. So in some parts of the world, the Sabbath would start at night, while others at high noon, and still others at dawn. So the whole world is in spiritual violation that has to be corrected before prayer starts. After reading that, I immediately look straight towards, metaphorically, towards Big Ben and GMT time. Because, as we know, different time zones around the world, etc., there is different clock times, stem from GMT. The commercial world runs from GMT time first, and Big Ben is the representation of that, standing on the riverbanks of the Thames with a huge clock dictating time. So it occurred to me that that is the evidence right there for anyone to see that there is a spiritual violation of time. Hello, am I still there? Hello.
Oh, yeah, you're fine. Yep. Keep going. Okay. Big Ben, so take us back to what Big Ben represents.
Yeah, Big Ben is essentially the prima facie evidence that there is a deliberate manipulation of time, because the Gregorian clock time, the GMT time, is running by the civilized and the civilized world, which is a second world corpus juris secundum like creation. Civilized speed of light is 186.00 miles per second, which is wrong and out of sync with time and true tribal time. So any time zones and clocks or calendars that are created from a speed of light that is wrong are therefore deliberately out of sync with time, and placing time zones, regions, and everyone out of time. And it's obviously been done deliberately, because there's evidence to show that they know that their calculation for the speed of light is incorrect. So,
Lucas, can we take this on the other side of a break? Because I certainly need a bathroom break, and some of our more mature listeners often need like a 1 hour break. You know, I've heard of some that have almost exploded during the times of an intense show. So I'm going to play some Robbie Williams, "Let Love Be Your Energy." I hope you're going to like this.
Take it.
Welcome back to Ever Beyond. My guests, Karen and Clans, called Karen Nameless. So many names. You're Karen Ann. And Lucas. And there's semicolons somewhere. And identifiers, I'm Dollar JP. And...
Do you want me to tell you what a dollar is? You know this. You know, think of the Kundalini and the whole chakra thing, like, you know, when you go up through the patios?
Yep.
Yeah, it's because you haven't got it yet, so they cut it in half, and that's your dollar sign.
Did you know that? So this is this is like the tally, actually, isn't it?
Yeah, there
it's
you go.
Like the tally stick, which was a stick that was divided in half by the king, and he said, this is worth a million squids. And I'll have the other half. And apparently, the tally stick system is the longest running ever monetary system of any kind, of any denomination of gold or whatever. The tally sticks have lasted longest of all.
Yeah. That was the Money Masters. I remember looking at that in Money Masters.
Yeah,
that's why we got to go back to the original community contribution, what we call the law of the gift. So there is this thing about the gift and the Tao, and it has to do with bloodlines and what we're here to do for those things too as well. So that could be a whole series as well. What is community contribution? Remember, I haven't used commerce for like, I've been out of the system a long time, you know, and we're thriving. I'm having the best time ever. I got the best food, best water, and no commerce. It's great. I have no stress.
I love that you use squids. In reference
squids
to...
Squids and squids.
As well, squidlies. Like, that's... I love that.
Squid, like, bucks, you know, bucks and squids.
Yeah.
And all that stuff. Because it's not real. And this is the whole thing. We have to really deprogram ourselves from the spell of what money is purported to be. You know, you say you don't use commerce... But you do trade still. We all need to trade. The human is a trading creature. It's how... I mean, this is an interesting point as well. The powers that be are trying to impose what they call free trade, yet what they call free trade doesn't mean free trade for humans. It means free trade for them, which means that they take what they want without any cost. That's free trade for them. But for us, the idea of free trade is to be able to trade freely, i.e. that I can send you whatever I like in the post, and you can send me whatever you like, or you can send to Lucas whatever you like, and then Lucas send whatever he wants to me, and that's a trade, and that's our commerce, and nobody can touch that.
Yeah.
And that's their problem, is that they think they can.
That is the problem. Yeah, because it all just comes down to an agreement between whoever, doesn't it? I'll do this for you if you do that for me, okay? Or I'll swap you this for that. Fine, you know? Shouldn't really be a problem. I mean, it's an individualist thing, you know, between however many of you are. And that's all it should be, really. This is my contribution. I'll cut your lawn and, you know, and... How's about you give me a few tomatoes for doing it? You know, that's all it should be. It shouldn't be, as you say, the free trade where they take everything and everyone else suffers for it. So,
And I think this is the really cool thing about the going back to the garden and the domains, or we call it the, which is really cute in our language, Baba would be promotes, but the Kapishchi. And to do this almost at Kapish, right? is where people gather together from all different things. So there's basically like the community, you know, I don't want to say marketing because you're not marketing per se, and we're not doing, and again, trade usually, like the whole word even donates and donations and stuff, where we're getting into that, trying to educate people. But this is where people gather together for the Vision stuff and basically sharing. So it's a community pooling, actually, community contribution. So, you know, someone might be the best kale grower. I'm really good at maybe doing biofeedback or, you know, administrating law. That's what clan mothers do. But that's the natural healing. So when we go out to these different gatherings and stuff, right, you know, the guys keep my fires when I'm out on the camp going 24/7 in case someone requires counseling, oils, food, whatever it might be, physically, mentally, emotionally. And I think that's where, actually, David Wolf put a very cute thing together. It's called Visions of Paradise on YouTube. And that's the idea, you know, of what we got to go back to is looking at this where there's that commonality. And in between ourselves first. So the individual, and especially I've got to encourage the women, is to go find where your homeland is, where your motherland is. Can't do it inside the cities, and you can't do it inside the grid. It's impossible. So, you know, we've got to go back to nature, to natural ways of living, develop it there. And I mean, it's the most beautiful thing to think that I'm going to go back and, you know, gardening. So, you know, getting the seeds and everything else that you've put together. So, you know, my little road tour helping, you know, which has been nice, helping other people get healthy along the way and doing the gathering. But, you know, it's time for me to go home so that we have a place to start that particular thing. I've had that thing set up for 2-3 years already. But now to get everything, you know, put into place. And, you know, we got some cabins to start with some people, because there's people internationally and globally that want to come into this area. We know it's going down with the pole shift. And a lot of people are ready to make that shift. You know, that's that quantum leap for some of the people coming into this area because they want to be in safer areas. And like you said, you know, you're in a good place, you know. You might be in the best place ever. And Luke is doing something where he needs to for a while. And maybe it's the coming together, you know, to gather people. But there'll come a point where we want to make the transition ourselves, you know, and move up too. But, you know, protecting those waters. And we couldn't do it without the assistance of you guys. So I really want to thank you guys openly, JP and Lucas, because we could not have done it this far without, you know, your encouragement and your support. So I want to thank you for opening up your space and allowing that to for me to be able to do this. So,
well, that's right. You. I'm a Canadian too, you know. We're all Canadian here. No, really. My dad was French. He's Quebecois, and so I have the. You know, it's an Canada's a really interesting place because it's got people who kind of to us sound like Americans, but you're into like you all know Doctor Who, and you all know BBC, and it's amazing. It's like having a cousin who grew up in the same area that you never met. And then you come back and say, oh, wow, do you know it? Yeah, really? Do you know this? And it's just so exciting because it's like having a load of things in common with people that you've never really been allowed. We've never really been allowed to like each other. You know, Canada is really silent in Britain.
Yeah.
Unbelievably silent. You know, we hear about America, we hear about Australia, not so much about New Zealand. But, you know, a little bit of, but mostly Australia, because they're, you know, loud. There's all these Americans are loud and brash, and the Australians are loud and brash, and the Germans are forthright and da-da-da. But, you know, the Canadians are nice people.
Mm. Yeah, it's not much. Don't hear too much, really, do we? The one thing I did share with Karen that she didn't know about at the time was the game of Conkers.
Oh, jeez.
That we have over here. We had a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun kind of going through that at the time.
And trying to explain what a niner was.
Yeah, exactly. So we had quite a laugh at that over half an hour, once I was going through the details, and, you know, Karen was absorbing that, trying to grasp exactly what it was. So that was quite fun. So yeah, it's like that thing, you know, you say, oh, you know Doctor Who too. And I was like, ah, she doesn't know Conkers. That's amazing. I thought Conkers was worldwide.
Yeah, well, it's, and what's interesting is that, and in the same way, Scotland, guys, Scotland is like that to Britain as well. I mean, we're hearing about Scotland right now because Scotland is trying to tear its way away from the clutches of the evil British Empire, which still thinks it's royal and still everybody believes in it. Oh, for God's sake, can't you tell yet, folks? Jimmy Savile. All I need to say is Jimmy Savile. Break the illusion, smash it to pieces. Jimmy Savile kills. Yeah. Anyway, you probably understand that a lot better than Lucas than everybody else does, but you know,
I've never understood a thing in my life. I don't know. I'm just learning a lot. We're sharing.
Understand.
I always laugh. I always said, you know what? I'm not a Canadian. I'm certainly not a British Columbian or whatever. But you know, we need to look at this too, and that's the establishment of that's how I've done this, is to reestablish what we call the CAM land, basically, in here, but reestablish our own lineage and reclaim what was there. And this is where the Kamatic and all that CAM language came out of my blood lineage. So basically the stuff is, it's just putting back into place what's been either, taken away or stolen away or whatever. And people need to start looking at the respect and stuff of the clan mothers. This education has got to go out that the clan mothers actually supersede, and actually we carry jurisdictions, and I do, to override basically how the assistance of, even as people know, as the military, the armies of the world. It's kind of like, Red Cross, Doctors Without Borders sort of thing. That treaty that I hold and that seal of peace, they know and they recognize. And if there's something that they require, whatever, or assistance, we're here to help, each and every one. I mean, those people have given oaths also to uphold the law and that to understand, our laws in here. And I know, even trying to educate people in the area, we're not to be touched. Touching a clan mother is right up there worse than, like, assaulting a police officer. Those things can carry military charges. And people need to be very, very aware of what they're doing and also how they approach us with respect and stuff too. This is stuff that's been destroyed and eroded over a long period of time, and I think that's the thing too, is there's got to be a mutual thing, but respect is earned in my world and stuff too. When that teepee and stuff goes up, those teachings and stuff that we have are very, very sacred. That teepee is like the capstone for me. And what that does is that we've received the teachings on to be, truthful as child bearers, as women, and for child rearing, and to have the honor and respect and the love and the peace, because we've had to, so to speak, earn it. But that's the other thing, too, in party commanding. So that's one of the things, too, that's got to be really put back. Place is how we also deal with each other too. So I know I've been having to do that a little bit in the area, that different incidents that just arose as well, and that no one owns any land, but we have the title to it. We're technically the inheritors of this, to be the caretakers of it, and we're basically, like, in essence, almost like an oath keeper, because we've given our oaths and we've given our lives to protect this earth, so as peacekeepers as well. So we share that in common.
Yeah, I mean, it's the respect generally, as well, just for the way you live your daily life has to be brought back to everyone, really. Just respect to anyone, who it is, really, as you come across every day. It's respecting them, who they are, their ideas, thoughts, the way they live. Just the whole respect generally as well is very important to do this, because obviously, when you're trying to create a sort of sacred area and a peaceful area, If others aren't respecting each other, that's where all the arguments can come from. You can't do this, can't do that, etc., etc. So, even though someone may disagree, you should still have that air of respect for them. So just say, okay, I disagree, and then go forward from there, and really start to create wonderful kind of spaces. I think. That's very important.
Yeah, I think so too. And I just wanted to say that's so important when you're starting to look at these rights of love and learning to do the co-creation and stuff too, is that we co-create also within our groups, within our communities and friends. And that's connecting on all levels, like spiritually, mentally, emotionally, and physically. So I think that's got to be, you know, point and point and stuff too. And, you know, like I said, it encompasses everything, right? Even to the animals and stuff like that, you know, the whole different area. And teaching people, you know, especially this whole thing too about how we start coming together and these whole things, what they used to call that tribal, you know, courting. I mean, where's the things, the higher courts, you know? And that's part of the other thing too, is people don't realize this, the International Hague. I don't know if you know this. Did you know, JP, I'm the biggest Hague you'll ever see? So,
oh.
And I say that with great enthusiasm now.
Is that like a combination of vague and...
Oh my gosh. Lucas can tell you, but when you go back into this, actually, you know, when you go back to Enki, right, and the surname Hague or Seg, but was the Hague, the Hague Courts. So yeah, that's how far back mine go back.
Yeah, like, you know, the if we go to the Vedas and stuff and Enki and all those things, it's Ninhasag was one of those in there. And then obviously the Hague gets brought out of that, the Hague Court. And the Peace Palace. So it comes from sort of those origins, as it were, sort of the peaceful, that peaceful ways of living, and peace treaties come from that. So yeah.
So that's very interesting. Because one of the things, a little bit of cross-pollination here for you, is one of the things that the Morning Sky, I was talking with Morning Sky on Journeys with Rekha on Friday, and one of the things he said about what he was wrong about, because he was like saying, well, I did a lot of things and I said these, but I was actually wrong about the gender of the Anunnaki. Mm-hmm. And he was saying that they are all in fact females.
Yeah.
And the Enki is Eki. And mm-hmm. then there was Ninhasag. Obviously, she, you know, she was always known as female, but that they were all female. What's your take on that, my love?
Well, when you start looking back into that, well, I think it's really simple. Like any of us know, is that each one of those particular alderler lines, we come through, you know, a matrilineal, like what they call mitochondrial DNA or mitochondrial even stuff too. We just know that that's natural law for the most part, at least for our species. And when you go back to this whole thing about Vega and Vegans and Lyras and all that and where we all come off of, and that's part of what's considered to be Star Nation's knowledge. And so, I mean, this is where I get excited to be called a hag now, and because of my, you know, expertise in quantum medicine and integrative medicine, like you're being your own, you know, quantum, like a NASA, you know, physician, I can be excited to be called now a quack. So, you know, I've got a whole new world of stuff here, but... Going back to the female thing, we know that that's the basis to all life. And there's no thing, whether you take Yahweh, you take all that, you take back from the Freemasonry to the Rosicrucian to the Sangreal, and, you know, that's what the whole thing, too, about the dragon queens of the Grail, the succession stuff, as most people know, but they were really clan mothers. And, you know, what that actually all entails is there. This goes back a really long time, so... we happen to know what those shields are and all those type of things, and, you know, our Noah Ark, or, you know, if someone held theirs with a peace pipe treaty or whatever it might be. But I think this is where Robert Morning Sky and stuff like that, looking at some of that, they've made some different things that they need to. This is where the sharing of the information would be really good, because I know in looking through his site and with women, or looking at different people like Michael Tessarian is amazing, and Santos as well. But looking at some of the stuff, what they've got from some of those different, as they call elders or whatever, but the background to all dragons, and we don't use the word chiefs, is that basically this has been the information that's been held, you know, and kept back. And it really is for women to step into their power. And we really need to get this kind of information out. And, you know, the Anunnaki and stuff like that, it's like you can't just put a blanket statement and say that, you know, all this group is bad or all whatever. You know, this is our blood lineage. And we hold this near and dear, really, to our hearts. And that's what we call fourth dimension or love, right? I'll let Lucas take over for a minute.
It is.
Well done.
it is interesting to cross-reference that with Michael Tsarian's thesis, where he says about the original Adams and Eves that were created by the Anunnaki, Sons of the Serpent, etc., were the Eves, the first, if you say, the first group of them, the first batch that were created genetically down here or whatever. He says that the Eves were unable to reproduce at that time. He did say that. And that's quite interesting to reference that towards what Morning Sky said, that the Anunnaki would have been all women. I can see that kind of making sense now, that if the Anunnaki were women, then if they were to create an Adam and Eve, they wouldn't want the Eves to be able to reproduce, because they would obviously want to, you know, plant their lines here from them. So they wouldn't want random sort of reproduction done between the Adam and Eves to start with. So that, you know, that kind of fits together. I think that's an interesting correlation between those two things.
So then the idea that the Sons of the Serpent created males, in effect, isn't this, this is what he's saying, isn't it?
Yeah.
That the males were created by the Sons of the Serpent, creating Adam out of Eve, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. Which is, I mean, looking around at this stuff for a while now, our sort of thoughts that have occurred on that, because the way that sort of story goes is that the Adams were created for, you know, for the strength and to mine and build and do all this other stuff. So if that actually happened, then you would obviously want them to have like a female counterpart that would obviously make them happy and stop them from revolting and all this sort of stuff, you know.
One of the things I just want to mention here that Robert Morningsky was also saying is that the X chromosome that's carried by the women and the Y chromosome is carried by the men. And now we know by scientists what they're saying is that Y chromosome is actually an X chromosome that's been actually altered with a withered arm. So in essence, basically what they're trying to get into saying, if we just cut through all the, you know, stuff I know is medical and nursing out, that virtually every ultimately single man on this earth is actually an altered female. And that's some of the stuff that they talk about in here on some of the gene splicing and stuff too. And it's all about, that's why, you know, with going like to these different things now that we're having up here called the seed event and back to the rose, and we could go back to the white rose and all that kind of stuff, but it's the embryology. Therefore, if a female embryo is bathed in certain chemicals, it will yield to another kind of being. And those beings can be altered. So, you know, we see this even in embryology, in the womb and stuff like that. So I know it throws a whole...
No, I think it's perfectly simple. I think it's perfectly simple.
It is. It's not that difficult.
We're all sisters.
Exactly.
We're all sisters. So even some have got beards and moustaches and hairy chests. So let me tell you, I've had relationships with girls, and I've had bigger boobs and longer hair than they have.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing this with the hormonal changes, and I do want to bring that into events here, that a lot of people don't realize that, but that's what this whole thing's been based on. So if you go back into all the, you know, wisdom of the sages and the Vedas and the Vedros and those kind of things here, that's basically what's been happening here, is that replication. And then that's what we've got to go back into, is getting back into balance, all of us ourselves, and all of us getting back into our divine feminine. He calls it the Lady of Fire. I wouldn't use Lady and Lord myself, but I get the idea of what they're trying to say in here. And that's the basis or the essence when you talk about his Lady of Fire and basically what the Garden of Eden is. And so a lot of those things like Lady Enki and stuff like that are what it all was, but... You know, the spirit water, the Fais, the Christos, the whole thing in here. It's really simple way to get into some of these different etiologies and what it is. But basically, what we're doing is, I'm coming back to my original signature. It's like, you know, the cycles come home, and we're outside of time. So it's kind of like the medicine wheel, which is really international law here. And that women, the women came from the great spirit, from the creator, from the stars. We're all stardust. And each one of us has that spirit of the divine feminine, and that's for each one of us to go in here. So this is the plunging deep into those diamond, the waters and stuff like that, that is our home. And coming back to that and protecting these gardens right now, and that's what I'm doing. I'm in my mountains and, you know, closing off all the stuff that's no longer needs to be around here. It's no longer benevolent for everyone here. And that's where I can stand high here.
If we come forward from that, the lines that stem from those original women, and you know, if we were saying about the dragon line and the dragon courts, we sort of bring it forward to the White Rose, the Magdalene line that you know everyone knows about and has heard about in various forms. That what that line is and what that White Rose line is. That comes down. It stems from that. Stems from those original women, from those original lines, and those dragon women. That it becomes. It's not essentially a grail as everyone would know it and stuff. What it actually is when you're off that line. It's being off of that line, that rose line. Is that what you are? You are a living presence of the peace treaty. So the line is actually those that were standing to and held that peace treaty. So that's what it is. That's that flow. So coming off of that, it's important. That's why it's important to know who you are and what line you're off of. Because once you know, then you know that your line was part of the original treaty. So it comes down through. You know, the rose line, the Magdalene line. Well, Magdalene essentially means tower. So if we look at the word tower and we look at Isis and Nephthys, well, they were sisters, but Nephthys was known as the woman of the tower. You know, that's like the hat, the sculpture she wears on the head. So what that actually is Nephthys is the sister of Isis, is the sister of the peace treaty, the Eye of Isis peace treaty. So she's the sister of peace, essentially. So Mary Magdalene is Mary of, you know, Mary of the Tower, who is a sister to the original peace treaties. So the descendants of a Magdalene line are essentially those who contain, you know, those who are the peace treaty. They're a living representation of it. It's not just paper, which is dead, right? So the peace treaty has to be living. So that's the
significance of the blood.
Yeah.
Because it's a soul ray energy that is moving through the blood.
Mm-hmm.
Is it the iron?
It's that original star fire. It's that minerals.
The
is
star
that.
Fire. Oh,
and the star fire was actually the divine menstruum.
Star fire, Miss Grandmother, please.
You'll love this.
Yeah, I know. My girlfriend needs to hear this. I'm going to have to play the replay. She's not listening.
I tell you, this is where it actually gets really quite good. And when you go back to Tiamat and Lilith and all that kind of stuff, too, and like, you know, Cain went, and it was actually meant queen and stuff like that. You get into the blackness, the nothingness, as alchemists know, which is really the cerebellum and where we are up in here. Anyway, and the Cam Kemetic language and all that. But anyway, that queen, or Cam, was actually metaphysically assigned to the moon. And it was received as the monthly lunar female essence of the women of the spirit, or women of the clan, of the creator. So that's the divine menstrual blood. You know, that comes back to our chalice, to the Rosicrucians, to the dew waters, the dew cup, all that thing. That's what it is. That's the royal, and I'm not going to use, that's royal no more. It's actually noble. We're of noble elements. And that's actually where the thing, the female form, the Mark of Cain came, which people know as the sign is Venus, or really the cross came from outside their circle that were the women of the cross. But these were basically what the dragon kin, kingship, whatever, you know, we'll switch the things here now. But that actually is what the starfire is. It's the purest and most potent life-giving, but life-powering. that was venerated. That's what Starfire was to represent. And the hermetic single was basically actually the circle with the little dot in the center. And so that constituted the genus. And the Nin Kersang was the ultimate woman of life, the life bearer. And that was her genes that were really the true beginnings of that sacred bloodline. And that, again, is what the genesis has also been identified. It's transcendent with the gene of Isis. And that means, again, the beginnings. And so that's the eye of enlightenment to me, going in here. And so that's where people really need to go. It's so simple. I mean, that's why, you know, in some of the texts they used to call the queens of the heaven, but it's really clan mothers. There's a huge jurisdictional difference between, you know, a queen, a king, a prince, a princess, a lord, a lady, and all that little caste system that's got to be wiped away with, because that's what's eroded basically the sacredness of the original lines and stuff that we need to go back to, a tribal law. So it really is simple. You know, I just came down to it. It's all about the love.
Yeah.
You love yourself, yeah. Which we do, you know, I do. And that we are Yahweh. We are that creation. We are the creator. And then that's how we can come together and start learning about co-creation. And that's the most beautiful, beautiful thing. It's coming into that divine essence within ourselves. And I mean, a lot of people, I mean, we can go into even the essence of really what the chalice or the mass was in the Eucharist, right? Was actually with the females, with their men, their beloveds and stuff too. That's what the early chalice was the drinking, not of like wine, for gosh sakes. It was, you know, fresh off the wine, was off the vine, which was the tree of life. But again, would have been the drinking, actually, ingestion of menstrual blood and stuff. I mean, even like people have a hard time when I'm starting to talk to them about vedically doing urine therapy, let alone, you know, really taking the ingestion of, yeah, of menstrual blood.
I know some of the listeners have this thing. Oh no, not again! Jay's talking about pee, but blood and urine and tears and saliva. Correct.
Exactly.
Guess where they all come from, guys and gals? It all comes from your bloodstream, and it's filtered out through the glands. That's where it comes from. It's your blood. It's the water from your blood, and. There's so many questions. First of all, like, you're talking about the non-hierarchical structures, and that we're all now involved in hierarchical structures. Again, we're talking about what Michael Tesserin was talking about in The Origins of Evil, this bunch of dickheads, cone heads. Penis heads.
Those ones, yeah. Nefarious ones.
Like the cone heads. It's almost like these Saturday Night Live. They came with the cone heads,
it's
anyway.
The cone heads. It's these tall, thin cone heads who just can't help swinging their schlongs around. As Tracy reminded us, Tracy Kennedy reminded us that we've got this tiny, tiny, tiny amount of this this masculinity thing that came from them, and it hasn't done us very good, you know, this tiny, tiny. So she says, I wouldn't like to meet the guys themselves, considering that they're like 100% of that stuff, you know, not very nice.
Well, I guess, you know, maybe those giants and stuff, maybe that's exactly what they are like then, big, giant-y men, you know, like that. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, everything that is horrible about men, imagine, it's like all concentrated into one big lump.
I guess that's
kind of an a-hole giant.
Yes.
Right, I mean, that, now we're getting a picture of who the gods are. Whoops. Of who the gods really are, you know.
Yeah, oh, I guess that's kind of where the image of, like, the Hulk and stuff comes from then, is that kind of thing.
Yeah, the beanstalk giant.
Yeah, they're just kind of, I suppose, yeah, you know, that's what they were considered gods, I suppose, because they were so huge and, you know, seemingly powerful and all this kind of stuff, but I don't know what one would do with that, if you sort of faced one of those, not sure, but you know,
run.
Well, yeah, maybe.
That's Alex Collier's. If you meet an Anunnaki, if you, especially if it's a reptilian, if you meet a reptilian, the best thing to do, just run. As fast as you can. Don't look back. Just run.
Well, you know, we do have the story of David, though, don't we? David and Goliath.
Well, exactly. And actually, you know, this is...
He stripped off, supposedly stripped off all his armour and went out there with a sling. So, you know, I mean, let's say if one turned up, well, maybe not alone anyone could do anything, but if there were a lot of us together, you know, perhaps that's the way we go about it and the way we look at everything. Like, together, as individuals, you know, we can defeat anything and, you know, surpass all our problems or issues that, that we have to face. So I guess it's more metaphorical, perhaps, than anything else, maybe. What do you think?
I think, well, no, I think that it's very likely that if there was a giant, and he was, you know, a concentrated amount of that male energy that we so dearly love having on the planet, that if we could concentrate that and characterize that, we would talk about, you know, just a really, really big a-hole. And you know, a really unpleasant person, someone you wouldn't want to hang out with, somebody that you'd rather stayed up in their castle, but sometimes you might need to interact with them, or they may be standing in the way of something. They may be standing in the way of a necessary resource, which might, which David, by killing the dude, might have released, because the giants, don't the giants always guard the treasure? You know?
Yes.
And the yes, the way to the sacred land and things like that.
Yeah. Yeah, the ogres under the bridge always have, like, treasure or whatever as well, don't they, and stuff, I suppose. Yeah, I guess they do. I don't know whether any of that actually exists, though, any longer, you know. And if they did, you know, it's been many thousands of years. And there's so it's said that by now they've sort of sniffed so much gold dust that their ways have changed and they've evolved to a point where, you know, they're peaceful now. So
they're 15-foot long flaky wafers.
Yeah, just kind of
moisturize me.
That's great.
Moisturize me. Moisturize me.
Just laying under trees with nice pink linens and stuff. Yeah. That kind of thing. Yeah. But perhaps they are that way now. And if they are, you know, wonderful, then yeah. Come down and help us figure out the ones that are still a bit carried away with themselves down here. So, yeah, I don't know. It's kind of, we can guess, I suppose. No one really knows until we meet one. But yeah.
Well, they say that the obelisks in the world are, they represent, or maybe they mark the burial point of these beings. So there may well have been giants. Up until maybe, you know, maybe there still are, like you say.
Yeah.
Maybe that, I mean, it might be likely there might be some progeny, the half-breeds, and that's the families, isn't it? This is the...
Yeah, there's many documented tall men and women around the world, isn't there? You know, all throughout, you know, even modern kind of history. From all over the globe, there's pictures and descriptions of huge, tall men and women that are still around now, but also like sarcophagus and mummies and stuff. So, you know, I guess that kind of maybe did, there was a cross breeding there, and that stuff filtered down, and they're not as big and ogreish and terrible as what they once were, you know, because those lines have been sort of watered down slightly in a more peaceful way. But there's definitely stuff out there about negative, where a lot of the negative kind of warring war zones and all this sort of stuff around the world are all based where they reckon there could be these beings were like buried, or where their tombs might still be underground and stuff.
And malevolently affecting the world around them even after they die. That's probably what they have the obelisk for, as a sort of transmitter of their nastiness. Maybe we should shut them all off.
That's one. I think that's one reason for certain grid structures that have been put in place. Yeah, definitely. But the obelisks, if we look at what the obelisks actually are, they're territorial like tribe markers, which are like presenting, essentially showing like the peace treaties. It is what they are. That's kind of why they're sort of placed where they are around the world now and stuff. I mean, they're still placed specifically, and they're not used how they should be used. They're still kind of part of a grid system that is pumping out, you know, negative vibes everywhere. But the peace treaties, it's like the totem pole. It's like a peace treaty marker, a tribal land marker, essentially. So anyone can sort of walk past, see, and go, okay, these are, you know, this is what this is. This is the peace treaty. You know, this is a place sacred place, a peaceful place, etc. And by these sort of laws. So, but yeah, obviously the grid system, you know, just out in like out that way, states, what everyone calls the states, is you know, building on a grid. You know, so horrible to do that. You know, I mean, nowhere in nature is there like a grid like that. You know, like built stuff specifically in type of grids. You know, I may be wrong. Maybe there's some creature, insects that kind of builds stuff there, but usually, as far as I know, it's not. You know, but it's so toxic to build that way, isn't it?
Yeah, I'd love to live in a dome because that's the shape of my brain. That's the shape of my skull.
But,
let's just some feedback from the chat room. There's Tracy Kennedy there. The story said they took of us what they wanted. Don't think we volunteered. No, exactly. And maleness is relatively new on the planet. Yes. So, very interesting.
That's why I like maleness thing. That's why I liked watching Fight Club. The themes that are in there, there's one scene where the two guys, or it's the guy and his obviously other self, get on a bus and they look up at one of the adverts on the bus, and it's like a Calvin Klein advert, you know, and the guy's like oiled up and he's got like no hair or anything and he's like really muscly and all this sort of thing, you know, those type of adverts. And he says to the other one, he sort of nudges him and goes, "Is that what a real man looks like?" You know? And he just sort of smirks. And then that's it. And then this big, big, burly guy walks past and sort of bumps past him, you know. And it's like, no, that's what a real man looks like, you know. Actually a man in his own sort of physicality, not some sort of primed up, oiled up, you know, huge, perfectly toned, muscly sort of geezer that's pumped out there and promoted. This is man. You must become this, you know, that Adonis type of
no, man is more like Homer.
Yeah.
More like Homer Simpson, really. Peter Griffin, more like, you know, to be honest.
Lots are. I'm not, but yeah, lots are.
I am. You know, so, male pattern baldness, it's fine. It's yeah, anyway, so, but there, you know, let's go back to bloodlines now. Andrew Bartzis was talking about a long time ago purpose for the Earth to be the place where many bloodlines combine to create the single human. And is that something, that bloodline interaction has been hijacked? Do you agree with what he's saying there?
I guess we kind of do in a way, yeah. But from what we've looked at is that everything came in from sort of 13 star nations. So each one contributed, like their
community potluck.
Yeah, so
community contribution.
Each one contributed, like, you know, some of their stuff. So, you know, a type of tree or some plants or minerals, or, you know, and then we go to the waters. So the water being deemed sacred here, always being deemed sacred, would be because it's a combination of all 13 Star Nation's waters, which makes it so powerful and so pure. That was the agreement to come. Yes, we'll all come down here and we'll all bring our stuff and we'll all put it there for us all to share, you know, and like mix together. So
which
I think,
amazing.
Which is, you know, absolutely amazing. So,
which is why I get my water at we call it the Roseberry Springs here. With the rose and the bear for the berries. So anyway, there we go.
So
enough to Halcyon, which will be peace.
We're coming to the close of this show. I've really enjoyed this this vibration. It's a very very radiant energy.
Thank you.
In many ways, you know, it's radiant in terms of it radiates outwards. It's radiant in terms of it carries and it will carry into the future. Do you have a YouTube channel? I'd recommend putting this one on it.
I do have, actually. It's got a few videos on there. It's called Freedom in the Stars, and it's all one word. And on there, there's about five videos on there, and it shows some of the proclamation stuff that we put forward, and it also has some language that I sort of now speak as well. It's like star language and original language. They're on there, and I also have a regular Facebook thing as well, which is Lucas Blue. So that's LucasBlue. So like all of my stuff can be found on there, in the albums and photos in there as well, of many codings and bits about lore and all of that. So
geezer.
Exactly. We have the Akashic Records. See, we did a skewer session biofeedback with him. Next thing, you know, he's speaking in tongues. Like we were interpreting the Star Nations, our original star light language.
Well,
so pretty cool.
You should check out Cassandra Van Zandt.
Yes.
Have you met her?
No, actually, I haven't met with her yet.
Or have you spoken?
How's it?
But she went on Rebecca Jernigan. She channels different Star Nations voice thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing stuff.
Voice,
just
voice identification. Yeah.
Well, it's like a voice coding. I mean, it's like she goes and speaks the energy language, and she doesn't know what they're saying, but she gets an understanding of what they're talking about. But the voice comes through. It's very.
One step beyond Sherry Edwards.
I think
it's kind of like, you know, really interesting as we're in these times, and this is a time of peace, and I'm really blessed and honored and to have been chosen and stuff to go up there to kind of, you know, pioneer this. So I just want to encourage anyone that is up in the area, certainly to come up to around the Halcyon area. That's where we're going to be, which is just north of Nelson, or about 5 hours north of Portland, actually, in that area. So we're right between Calgary and Vancouver, so it's a great place to be. It's one of the best places right now, in the face of what's coming on with the pole shift. And as Lucas and I can go into this, it's a climate that sets actually the pole shifts for the pole star and the Polaris to basically light the way into this new age and, you know, dawning of the age of, you know, Aquarius and all that. So this is actually a really time. So I'm really glad that you guys are around to, like, celebrate. This is really about a celebration time right now. And it's going to be like the best times and best peaceful times ever. And getting people into the idea of doing, you know, raw food, like going even to websites. Like I send people to Nouveau Raw or Raw Amazing, find out how amazing make things. I mean, oh my gosh, it's like, you know, there's no end to creativity here these days. So,
trying to pronounce that colon.
I go by Cedar, you know, too. So either way.
So, what I'm going to say is, do you have a website that you can call your own?
You're going to laugh. We used to have one, but Cease's guys took it off. It was like a Patty Broussard thing too at one point. Actually, it turns out my web guys were actually CSIS agents, so there went most of my best information. But anyway, in the interim, what we've set up is on Facebook. It's a global, you know, multimedia social thing, so I'm kind of having fun with that. Lucas has actually got a huge thing. If you go to Lucas Blue on there, Mine, I've got two accounts. One's Karen Ann McDonald, so it's K-A-R-E-N, A-N-N, and then MacDonald. It's actually Lucic McDonald, M-A-C-D-O-N-A-L-D. Or there's one with my second account. It's the new one. It's just Karen McDonald, and those people that know David Avocado Wolf, my superfood, you know, awesome love there. There's a picture with him up there, too. So that's one way. Second way is Clan Mother K. L-A-N-M-O-T-H 1-3. So clanmother13 at Gmail. And the last way, of course, is I do have a Skype account. And because we're nameless, so I put called. So it's all one word, lowercase, which will be C-A-L-L-E-D-K-A-R-E-N Mac. And we'll probably get a new one. We'll have to make some things a little bit simpler. But right now, that's where we are. We're having fun. And, like, you know, we're around to do sessions for people. I do a lot of people, like I said, still for biofeedback or health sessions or whatever. They want, you know, readings done and all sorts of things I can do, curly and chakra realignments and stuff too. So people are basically healing themselves with the information we just give back to them. So that's what we've got for now. And other than that, we'll accept all the best help ever and appreciate all that. And we're ready to move on. So everyone that's ready to come out and can help me in whichever way they can, I would gladly ask for that and appreciate that support right now.
I do also. Do have a Google Drive, which is posted on my Facebook. So if you just scroll down in the posts on my Facebook page, there's a link there that will take you to a Google Drive that is open, and there's four folders in there with like codings and pictures and figurings out and diagrams, and then there's one with a lot of the proclamations in there, and then there's another folder that's got all of Meredith Quinn's books, the tribal laws, in there as well. So I'll repost that again, so it's like the top of the postings on Facebook with a link. So if you go there, you can click on it and go straight into that drive. It's all open for anyone to go in there and download it and check it out as well. So that's Lucas Blue on Facebook, L-U-C-A-S-B-L-U-E.
And the other thing I just wanted to mention, too, is the area that people are able to see where I'll be right next to is kind of setting up in the area. So if people want to take a global little look, it's really nice to kind of do your Google map thing, but it's going to be Halcyon Hot Springs, and it's like Halcyon with the Pleiades, but H-A-L-C-Y-O-N Hot Springs. So that's Halcyon Hot Springs. So that's the area in Halfway Hot Springs where we're basically going to be concentrating in on this area right now.
Is that anything to do with Halcyon of the Pleiades?
That's what I just said. There you go. So, we're just we're a little bit more north than that.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting. So we got Vega up in the skies.
Exactly.
We have Alcyone. Vega's only 25 light years away, so it's almost next door.
Well, you know, we have to be close, you know. So we're all sisters there.
Yeah, we're all sisters together. So that's been an absolutely awesome show. Thank you so much, everybody. Nameless Karen McDonald and Lucas Two Crows.
Well, that could be Luke Andrew Monday Wing.
Thank you. The Lucas Two Crows is a Skype thing, so
we had a discussion about this earlier, and sort of Karen sent me straight on that. So
yeah, we'll have to get you into this thing, the whole Pono Pono, and get you a little bit with Dr. Nick Good, and we'll figure this all out with you guys. Avo up here.
I love you. I'm sorry.
Oh my gosh!
Please forgive me. Thank you.
Thanks, Sydney.